T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
This is the official radio home of the Chicago Cubs. Listen to every game here.
That goes Bradley near the center field fence. That ball is gone. A two-run home run for Wilson Contreras.
On Sports Radio 670, The Score. Live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We are WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. And Odyssey Station. The Score!
Top of the hour is brought to you by Advent. If you have snoring, sleep apnea, or nasal breathing problems, go to AdventNose.com to schedule your appointment.
Walking into that canyon at the 18th with a big yellow scoreboard up there and just those tens of thousands of people with the clubhouse, you know, backing it up, it's got to be such a special feeling knowing that you're going to win.
It's the best. There's no better feeling.
You know, if we had Siegfried and Roy out there, would that make you nervous?
No, just you.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us down here. We hope we get to see you playing golf today. And
I wasn't even first loser either.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, it's difficult to think of you as a loser, but hey, you're a loser, and good luck next week.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I get a sign from Stevie Williams, wedge. That's what I expect. And he takes a swing, one of those ones where his right leg comes up off the ground, and, you know, he's off walking after it. It's like a cubic yard of Ohio flies out, goes about 50 yards up the fairway, and the ball is in the air. I'm thinking, oh, no, he did it again. The ball, you know, it's just going straight at the flag, and I'm thinking, oh, now what am I going to say? You know, that wasn't meant to happen. And I open my microphone, just as Ernie, who's standing right beside me, looks at me and says, and I look at him, and he looks at the microphone. So I just close it, and my producer says, was that Ernie Els? I said, yes, it was.
When you have Marshall Faulk on, he refuses to say what his handicap is, you know.
Yeah.
You must know guys like that.
Well, yeah, I do. I mean, I know a bunch of people, you know, that couldn't get down to single digits if they cut off a finger.
Let's talk some golf with David Faraday, he of the Golf Channel, NBC, FaradayOffTour.com, the Faraday Show on Golf Channel. He is on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, at APNissan.com. You can follow David on Twitter at FairTwit. David, how are you?
I am extraordinarily well under the circumstances.
Well, it feels good to have the Masters back in its proper calendar rhythm, I guess. It was good to have it last year, but it felt strange. This one makes everything feel a little bit better.
Yeah, it does. It's nice. It sort of feels like we're getting back to some kind of normality. It's with this particular tournament, you know, I think it makes it even more special.
To have the Masters be so close together, less than 12 months apart, do you think that affects anybody because of the mental stress and responsibility it takes to play at Augusta and the idea that there is an intensity to it that people might not realize necessarily from a non-golf perspective?
Yeah, Leela, it's a different atmosphere at Augusta, that's for sure. But I think they've had enough time in between. These players are so good these days. It takes very little for them to get into the rhythm, especially you know, the Masters is the only major that comes back to the same venue every year, so the players are familiar with it.
I wonder too where we are, what the next chapter of sort of Bryson DeChambeau versus the world, and what it would mean if his approach that's not supposed to succeed in Augusta, you're not supposed to just be able to wail away and then figure it out when you walk to that ball wherever it landed. That what it would mean if he were to triumph there, to the old guard in golf saying something that isn't supposed to happen indeed could happen.
Well, you know, they said that about Tiger, and they tried to Tiger-proof the golf course. The thing about Augusta is, and many really difficult golf courses, is they play easier for these guys when they play long. Now, I haven't seen the golf course. I'm not sure whether it's firm or what it is. But when it plays long, fairways are easier to hit. Greens are easier to hit. And these guys are so long now that, you know, it would give a player like DeChambeau a huge advantage. Because the thing that people don't realize about the Augusta National as well is it's wide open. Compared to a lot of golf courses that they play, there's big open spaces there, and it's also extremely hilly, which you don't really get a sense of on television. But if the golf course is playing long, obviously DeChambeau has an advantage there because as far as he hits it, as long as he takes it, it should be something special to watch. You know, he would take an hour and a half to watch 60 minutes.
We also know, David, and it is nice to talk to you on a radio show again, that there's going to be firm and fast conditions when it comes to Augusta this week. Do you think it's going to be a situation where we're seeing balls slide off the edge of the green and into oblivion, respectively speaking?
Yeah, if it's firm and fast, the scoring will be higher. That's the thing. The shorter the golf course plays, the harder it gets because of the nature of Augusta National. You know, it's much more difficult to hit fairways. The ball is bouncing and rolling out. And if you miss a green, it'll bounce. And you know, the greens at Augusta are very well protected, not necessarily with bunkers, but just with slopes and nearby trees, things like that. So the ball can get a long way from the green. And that's why, you know, you take the 15th, for an example, the par 5, up and over and down the hill to that little sliver of a green. You'll see players hit it over the back on purpose, because they don't want to hit it in the water. And then they're faced with a shot that, you know, you can hit it in the water a lot more easily with that little third shot coming back over the green. You know, so it's a different golf course in that way. The shorter it plays, the higher the winning score is liable to be.
There are certain people I've always enjoyed listening to how they talk about their experience and their preparation for the course. And that would obviously be Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods and Ben Crenshaw. And all of them talk about knowing where they can miss and limiting risk in that regard. And sometimes you it sounds almost self-defeating, but in fact, there's a self-preservation in getting that awareness. How does one practice that? Like in these rounds when they're trying to get the feel and trying to figure it out, how do you learn in for your own game where you can miss?
Well, by missing is the best way to do it. And the greens are so firm and fast. Augusta National is a place where if you shortside yourself, it's a much more severe penalty because it's so difficult to get it close to the hole. And if it does wander away, the slopes and the greens are so severe that you know, it just makes it a really bad idea to miss it there. You know, if the flag's on the right at 15, you don't want to miss it in that right-hand bunker, especially the right-hand side of it, because you're looking to keep it on the green, and that's, you know, you could be 80, 90 feet from the hole.
So who are you keeping an eye on, and who should we keep an eye on as far as people to watch? Not just the traditional names, but others who have had some good history in their last finishes at Augusta.
Well, DeChambeau is the one to keep your eye on. I think, you know, we don't know. We didn't have him last week at the Texas Open. So, you know, we're not sure how he's going to come out, but he'll be very well prepared. That's for sure. The other guy that I really like for it this week, believe it or not, is Jordan Spieth. I think he's highly motivated. He's playing extremely well. He's got his chin up, and I think he might be dangerous this week.
How do we get Rory McIlroy out of the wilderness? And I don't know why he's... I know he was sort of trying to speed up the swing a little bit, or he was looking for club head speed. I don't know exactly how he put it or what was being measured. But it just seems to me like he's due to be back in sorts after being out of sorts.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who's teaching Rory McIlroy. I know he's changed coaches from Michael Bannon. But whoever it is, they need to go away and leave him alone. There is no possible way to improve Rory McIlroy's golf swing. There is no one that makes the game look prettier when he plays well. And it's just a level of anxiety, and every player feels this, whether they're a weekend hacker or a top touring pro. You have that worry about where the ball might go. instead of paying attention to what you are doing. And if you let your attention stray outside the space that you occupy, that's you need to turn your attention inwards, because that's what you do when you play well, but you do it subconsciously. And all that's going on with Rory is the same thing that happened with Jordan for a while. I don't think it'll happen for nearly as long with Rory. But again, it would surprise me not to see him in contention come Sunday.
You mentioned Jordan Spieth, and he has had an excellent start to the season. Caps it off with that win last week at the Valero Texas Open. What have you liked out of his game, aside from just the focus?
Well, he putted so well, and that's the key. He's back holing putts, and when he putts well, there are very few better, that's for sure. And he loves the fast greens. There are some players out there that don't like them that quick. And Augusta, they never tell you what the speed of the greens are. 12 is quick. It's 12 and a half is really quick. 13 and sort of grows exponentially from there. But they never let you know the stint meter readings. You know, they call the greens tournament speed, which is a euphemism for, oh, Christ, no. You'll get putts out there that, let's put it this way, you put the average 10 handicapper on Augusta National in tournament conditions, and you put them in the center of each green in regulation, you may not break 90.
Wow.
It is that difficult. There'd be three putts, four putts, five putts. It's unbelievably difficult. But for these guys, when you get smooth, fast greens, you know, it's exactly what they're looking for, and it's in particular is one of the things that Jordan Spieth likes.
Tournament speed is like sitting down and opening a menu and seeing market price. That you
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
You know it's formidable, and it's probably way more than you could even imagine.
Well, it is. I sat up in my 15th tower where I was for 19 years, and occasionally I would watch them come out with the stimp meter and roll that ball down it. And I went down, I made a sort of a mental note where they were going from, and I paced it out, and it was 15 and a half, which is blinding. It's like putting down a flight of stairs. That's what they're facing this week.
I'm looking at the list of golfers. I look at the odds here and just sort of see who there's. This is such a fascinating field. And when I try to figure out who I want to win, I don't know about you. I tend to default to wanting someone I like, or at least someone I don't dislike, to get that first major, because that's always fun. You know, the Sergio Garcia moment I just remember is very, very special, when he was someone who said, I don't think I'll ever win a major. I don't have the stuff for it. And then he just kind of did, and it was cool. You know, and I don't know if that's going to be Matt Kuchar, or that's going to be Xander Schauffele, or it's Tony Finau, you know, who I mentioned earlier. As long as it's not Patrick Reed, I think I'm okay, because that's the way I tend to watch some of these big tournaments now, is just anybody but him, and I can be pleased.
Yeah, you're not alone in that. Yeah, it's people are trying to protect the game and the reputation, and when I played. If we had someone like Patrick Reed out there, he would have been ostracized. We had a thing. It is that serious. I mean, it carries such a tremendous stigma that I find it difficult as well to watch him. I really do. It's just something that shouldn't happen.
I'm glad to hear that, because it makes it tough for me, because we know. Why do you think that? He, when you say back when you played, he would have been ostracized. Do you mean that the wouldn't be playing, or would somehow be forced off? What would be the mechanism for what you're describing?
Well, the way he's treated by other players, you know, there will be a seriously cold shoulder offered there. Really, there's no way out of it. If you think about Vijay Singh, who cheated early in his life or in his career, you know, altered a scorecard somewhere in Asia. And he had a terrible, and still does, have a bad relationship with the media. And there's really no way out. It's a millstone that you hang around your neck for the rest of your career.
David, we really appreciate your time, and always enjoy it. So thank you very much for taking the time to join us today.
Not a problem. It's not like I had anything else to do. Kind of like the last year.
David, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, Leila. Thank you.
David Faraday of Golf Channel, NBC, and a great Twitter follow also at Fair Twit. And we'll have a fun weekend of golf to talk about starting on Thursday. Have you ever been to Augusta, by the way?
Oh, goodness, no.
Okay.
No. That's one of those bucket list things. And I'm not just saying that because bucket, but it is.
Because my
have
years,
you?
No, I have years ago. My dad got to walk a practice round, and we was had a friend who was a member that they flew down the whole thing. And when he mentions how hilly it is, that is what everybody says, that somehow TV does flatten out that course, that the undulations, the ups and the downs, and the physical toll it can take walking it is underappreciated, just because of the for whatever reason that doesn't come through the way they broadcast it.
And neither does the wide open space that he talked about, because that doesn't really show on television either. It must
Good
be
point.
Because of the camera placement. I would bet that they just restrict the camera placement.
This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS with a K, the numeral 4-KIDS. The Bulls won yesterday, and they played really well against an outmanned team. The schedule is starting to soften for them, and it looks like they know how they want to play now. The last three games, we can really see something start to come together a little bit, all based around that big fella for whom they traded. We'll talk some Bulls next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Young, over the shoulder, pass to Levine with a right-handed jackhammer slam. Oh my goodness, that was filthy.
And just in time for Martin to get in the picture.
I love it. A little pumpkin pie, and it's not even Halloween. Now I'm getting out the dancing shoes.
Excitement over the Bulls' bum slaying yesterday, a team that didn't have Malcolm Brogdon, it didn't have Domantas Sabonis, and then they lost Miles Turner later in the game. But they took care of business, and it wasn't even really close. That they kind of coasted through the entire second half, and they got a win. And the Bulls are now looking at an opportunity to maybe, dare I say, stack some victories. You heard a broadcast on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chuck Swirsky and Bill Wennington on the call. We're Bernstein and Rahimi, middays, 9 to noon, Sports Radio 670 The Score. But boy, the difference that it makes when they're starting to understand the angles and the spacing of playing everything through Nikola Vucevic. And it's fascinating to watch.
Billy Donovan had said before this game that he knew they're just going to have to play through the post. And we're seeing everything get refined in such a nice way. We saw that last night. You saw the pick and pop with Levine and Vooch. You saw the pick and roll with Levine and Vooch. It's a tempo that is really enjoyable. And I think one of the biggest parts of this game was the fact that I don't know if Larry Markkanen and Coby White are going to start for the rest of the season.
They're not. And he even said, I think Donovan used the term, he said something to the effect of, they're not going to be featured guys for us.
Yes.
Earn it. Earn it. Earn your minutes. Make it difficult for him to put you on the bench. And when Lowry understands he's 7 feet tall, he had some rebounds. He had some really good offensive rebound tips and attempts and throwing his weight, actually throwing his height around a little bit more than he usually does. Coby White was under control. Coby White wasn't throwing the ball all over the place. He wasn't dribbling with his head down. Make it tough for him to take you out of the game. And look, those are two number 7 overall picks, about whom it is now being publicly said they're not going to be featured guys. That's okay.
And then they traded away Wendell Carter. So think about all of that together, and it's an indictment.
It is, but it also is a vote of confidence in others and knowing who plays well together. It's hard to have Satoransky off the floor just because of how well he and Vucevic work. But let's get used to hearing from Nikola Vucevic, who here talked about how they really stepped on the gas in the third quarter and why he was so pleased with how they played.
Yeah, I think obviously in that third quarter we were able to build a pretty good lead, but it just came from us, playing good ball, executing our plays, moving the ball, setting good screens, cutting, I was, you know, able to get a lot of good looks and knock them down in that third quarter. But it was just really came from us playing good team ball, and it's something that, you know, coach puts a big emphasis on. But also, you know, everyone in this in the locker room wants to play that way. And so when we have guys that are unselfish that want to make each other better, you know, good things will happen over time. And it also, you know, we only played like six games now together, so it's not gonna, you know, be clicking all cylinders right away. But I feel like tonight was obviously our best showing, and there was, you know, signs of how good we can be if we continue to improve.
Well, he was brilliant, and he's obviously the guy. He's the guy now, and it's not your all-star Zach LaVine. LaVine had a bad shooting night, and he still scored 19 points and was still important. Obviously affects the geometry of the offense. But when he says, when Zach LaVine says, I don't care about my individual statistics as much as I care about us winning, I don't think he's lying. But I always wonder with scorers like that, with proud professional athletes, basketball players, scorers, I always wonder how much they really mean that.
I know he's real happy after he scored a lot, after a win. But I do know that he's been frustrated at times after games when he scored a lot and the team scored a lot, but they didn't play well the night before. Like, he's multiple times said that. So I know... that's like the first thing out of his mouth whenever they had a bad game the night before, or two nights before. So I think he can be trusted. Winning is the best medicine. And in times like this, when they get a win against a team that has played them very competitively in the past, even though they didn't have Sabonis, I still think it's a step in the right direction. For that reason, for what Vooch said, for what they're trying to work on, they did the things they needed to. And also, how about the three-point shooting last night? That's been needed.
And that affects Markkanen. That, you know, Jordan and I were just talking during the break that for whatever reason, the rest of his game, all the other stuff that he does, he's more likely to do it after he's knocked down a couple shots. And you can say, isn't that an indictment? Kind of, yeah, it is. Because when you get somebody who starts to mope a little bit, like if he misses a couple early, it doesn't seem like he's as engaged doing some of the other things and recognizing matchups and turning his hip into a smaller defender and trying to drop step somebody and seal somebody. That if he makes a couple shots early, he's got a different energy level. And if you can draw whatever conclusions that may be, I'm just telling you what I see from him in that regard. That if he's going to be that, what we saw last night with some of those matchups he had and some of that kind of intensity level, he could be a very valuable player.
No, I think you make an excellent point. And to that end, we saw that with the runs that he and Kobe helped put together to swing the game a bit. Third quarter, we also saw it in the second quarter, that 9-2 run that you're talking about with him and it was like a Larry block, and then it was to Thad, and then it was to Kobe on the finish. And that's the kind of energy that we need to see out of that unit, if that is going to be a unit moving forward.
Yeah, and there was like he had an offensive rebound and a kick out to LaVine for a long three. And as we're sort of monitoring the Zach LaVine fit, because that's really that's your coaching point right now. As this is all going in, and you can draw everything up and tell everybody where to go, but your management, the soft stuff here, as we call it, is going to be his level of happiness. And I usually am pretty sensitive to what I can feel as a my turn possession, where that guy's got that internal clock, and that was just the complete mess of like the Wade Rondo Bulls, where you just knew somebody, it's like his turn and my turn, and now it's me, and now it's you, and now it's me, and they weren't really playing as much team ball. I don't have as much a problem with it when someone like Zach LaVine, it's okay. He should have turns. He should have a minimum number of shots because he's a dangerous scorer. He should have opportunities to beat his guy and go get fouled because he's great at it, as long as he knows when it's okay. And that's Billy Donovan's job, to know that there are going to be times and places for him to get his. It's not necessarily a bad thing in a well-run offense.
It speaks to the idea of improving offensive efficiency as well. The Bulls need to get to the line more as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that starts with LaVine. It
also
needs
to
be Larry, frankly.
And you know what? Don't give away possessions by fumbling the ball over to people. They still did that. Even against an inferior opponent last night, LaVine and Satoransky, the book is out. The book is that just get your hands in there. Because the moment that they're kicking it around, they fumble it around. Certain turnovers are better than others. And there are some where you're trying to squeeze a pass into a little area, and they got away with it, too. There was a punch-in pass that they actually got away with that looked like it was almost tipped. And sometimes you miss a guy by throwing an alley-oop too high, or you wing one down the court. But they're actual a guy giving the ball away in a congested area. I hate those. And they're live ball turnovers, and they kill you. And it just those are really frustrating. The Bulls do it a lot.
Oh, they had 21 last night. And I was keeping an eye on this because even though they were not playing as well, the turnovers were down. Prior to this game, the turnovers had been slightly muted, respectively. But then what do we see last night? More possessions? What happens? More turnovers. I don't know if we just have to accept this on this team this year, that the more possessions they have, the more turnovers they're going to have. And that speaks to the efficiency as well. But that certainly was the case last night.
Yeah, maybe it's just going to be a function of playing, of having more possessions. And I'd have to look at some of the pace numbers, some of the more advanced stuff there, because it seems a little counterintuitive that they're going back to playing out of the post, that they're going back to matchup-based kind of old school ball in that regard, instead of, you know, running a weave around the top or trying to race their way down the floor. So it's, we have to look at them as kind of a different basketball team than start of the season and zero out some of these numbers and understand how drastically they've tried to change it. But it's from a coaching perspective, it's really interesting to watch how they're doing it and making the decisions they made at the front office level, and then trusting a coach to tell him we're going to do some things differently, make it work. And so far, so good. The last three games, the loss to Utah, they played really well. And then they had the other two victories to show for it.
Yeah, there are some numbers that I really like prior to the game. I don't know what they're adjusted to now, but they speak to what you're talking about. Like the post-up turnover rate went from 17.4 to 3.2%. And then they were 21st in the NBA. They're now first in post-ups after the trade deadline. There you go. Right?
Right.
I also think we need to see what's going on with Daniel Theis.
Yeah, do you know?
It says personal matter.
They just said the second game he's missed due to some kind of personal matter. So, and you miss him. You know, that is true. It should be taken into account when we balance some of the attrition from the opponent last night. But I'm fascinated too by when you say in post ups, it used to be that because there's a post up, you assume that the shot that they get is a contested two, which is the worst shot in the game. We know that. A shot taken from 15 feet with somebody in between you and the basket is inefficient. The points per attempt is bad. That's,
right.
We just know that. But what I'd love to know is how many plays that originated or included a post-up ended up with an open three just because of how they're doing it. It's like the way Greg Popovich changed the concept of screen roll, where the Utah Jazz famous Stockton Malone screen roll was designed to get a shot for either Stockton or Malone. Where Pop changed that. Pop used screen roll actions. He would do it with Tony Parker and Tim Duncan to get a three for Danny Green, to get a three for Manu Ginobili, to get a three that for somebody uninvolved in the pick and roll. And that's what I think Billy Donovan is doing with post-ups. I don't have the numbers in front of me. It doesn't matter how you start it. You can still get a really good shot just depending on how you change the shape of the defense. But that's kind of, you know, wonky X and O stuff maybe for another time. But suffice it to say, The arrow for the Bulls, I think, again, is continues to be pointed in a positive direction, short term and medium term, because of the smart people they have doing some of these things.
I like it. I think we can do a deep dive into it. I mean, I did tell you that I was watching YouTube on how to do a proper pick and pop the other night.
Mm-hmm.
It is really hard to say proper pick and pop. So I think we should look into it. Why not? We look into everything else on this show.
We have the Midday Midway coming up next. We're going to test the Jay Zawoski security access theory. We're gonna see if we can. Because remember, I believe if I have it correctly, Jay says, what is it? Hard hat,
clipboard,
and like reflective vest or like some credential. I know hard hat and clipboard are a part of it. Well, we're gonna test the limits.
Yeah.
Of that.
It's hard hat, clipboard. Don't look anyone in the eye and be white, and you can go anywhere you want.
Okay.
We're gonna keep it moving,
as they like to say.
We'll see if there's a corollary to that. Also, I have an explanation of a tweet that came from a scary place that had some people worried, and I don't know if it necessarily allays any fears.
A famous house is for sale, and the house is awesome.
Cool. We'll get to that on the Midday Midway in a moment on The Score.
This is Ian Happ, your center fielder from the north side. Connect Roasters and I are happy to announce the Home Run Club, a coffee subscription for baseball fans. You'll get freshly roasted coffee shipped to your door on the first of every month, access to exclusive game-used merch, personal notes from me, and most importantly, when I hit a home run, you'll get $5 dinger towards coffee and merch on connectroasters.com. Our goal is to have 1,000 members enjoying great coffee and giving back to the community. For more information, go to connectroasters.com or homerunclub.coffee. Together, we can make a difference, one cup at a time.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
It's Midday Midway time. We started the show by having sort of a Thursday on a Wednesday with our usual weekly wide-ranging conversation with Ian Happ, who did tell us that Andrew Chafin is everything he seems to be and more, and it's all real, and he's going to put in a good word with him and see if we can get a little, use Ian as an envoy for some outreach there. We discussed the Cubs and their chippiness and the fact that when you're not hitting anything, it may be just wise to celebrate the fact that you're on base, rather than trying to lash out at the pitcher that hits you when you're standing on top of the plate. David Faraday was his genial golf presence, as he always is. And then we lauded the efforts of the rebuilt Chicago Bulls in their win yesterday. All right, this is the Jay Zawoski theory, I think, taken to its logical extreme. This is Clearfield County, Pennsylvania. Two people faced charges in Clearfield County after state police were called to a Dollar General in Chester Hill for a report of a woman wearing a hard hat, holding a crock pot lid as a shield, and carrying a bathroom scale. Tiffany Kerfoot,
sure.
Tiffany Kerfoot, 25 of Phillipsburg, was under the influence of drugs and said that people were chasing her and trying to hurt her. She also told state police she saw a murder at 214 Roland Street, where she lives with her boyfriend, 26-year-old Nicholas Rowles. When troopers went to investigate, Rowles told them there was no murder and that Kerfoot had a drug problem. As state police were walking out, a trooper spotted a glass marijuana pipe in the middle of the living room floor. Rawls is now charged with misdemeanor possession of drug paraphernalia, and Kerfoot, who was taken to a hospital, was cited for public drunkenness. So, in fact, the hard hat was not enough. And maybe the hard hat, the crockpot lid as a shield, and carrying a bathroom scale sort of undoes the hard hat. All she needed, perhaps, was the reflective vest and a clipboard, and everything would have been.
Yes, when you're carrying things that make you look insane, that's going to draw attention to you. We had a guy call up off the air and confirmed my theory. He said, I can go anywhere in my Dayglo jacket. And yep. He said he can also park for free anywhere he wants because he just puts the vest in the coat in the window
the
of
window.
The car. And everyone's like, oh, he's working here.
If you have one of those reflective vests, you put it in the window. You're absolutely and if you're white, you're more than set.
All right, I have a new experiment.
Can't we just
I want to
get that on Amazon or something?
Probably.
Yeah, we could do that. But here's what I want to do. I'm going to wear a red polo and khakis to Target and see how big of a TV I can get outside the door before I get stopped.
Have you ever had that happen?
I mean, who's going to stop me? There's so many people working at Target. If I'm wearing the uniform and I'm rolling a TV out on the cart, everyone's going to assume, well, that TV's paid for. No one's going to stop me if I do that.
So you just openly admitted you're going to steal stuff?
I'm not going to actually do it. It'll just be an experiment, and I'm going to go in and lecture everyone. Hey,
I'm sure they'll believe you.
See what I just did?
Oh, my goodness. David Wallace's house from The Office is for sale. Do you know who David Wallace is? Did you watch The Office?
No, I didn't.
Okay. David Wallace was a character in The Office who was the head boss that they talked to. And Dwight Schrute, who observed holidays similar to the one you had yesterday, Dingus Day.
Yes.
Would always call David Wallace, or he would show up at his house unannounced, and the house became very famous. It looked like it was in Connecticut, and of course it was not. It's in Pasadena. And it is so popular that it has sparked a bidding war. And the price is now up to $6 million.
Oh my God.
$6 million for David Wallace's house from The Office.
And by the way, the character David Wallace was named after David Foster Wallace.
I've wondered this!
According to Wikipedia, a favorite author of John Krasinski and executive producer Michael Schur.
No way. Really?
How cool is that? Yeah.
I was going to say something about David Foster Wallace. I also listened to his Kenyon graduation speech. I got to find the audio clip to listen to. I just read it before. And I really wish that I had heard him speak before you read his letter, because that would have hit it home. However, back to this house. $5,995,000, and it's already up past that for the price. It's 6 bedrooms, 6 bathrooms, and it's really cool. It was built in the 1920s, and it really does look like it's in Connecticut, but apparently it's just in Pasadena. According to historical records, the property cost $16,000 to build, which is approximately 4 times of the cost of an average tract house at the time. So if you get to see the pictures, they're on Dwell. They're pretty cool. It's 6,301 square feet. I don't know what you need to do with all that, but it's there.
I don't know Pasadena real estate, but that sounds about right. I mean, it doesn't sound like you're paying a fabulousness tax just because it's from a character in The Office. If what you're describing is that's probably about what the market should be.
There's really, really pretty neighborhoods there by the Langham Hotel, which is where a lot of the baseball teams stay. And the Father of the Bride house is also there. And I'm wondering if it's in the same neighborhood. But it's really, really cool. It's worth a look. David Wallace apparently lived a pretty good life in his fake Connecticut, really Pasadena house.
Last weekend, there was a very... scary tweet, I guess, because of where it came from. There was a tweet from U.S. Strategic Command that is at US_Stratcom. And that's the nukes. Stratcom is your global strike authority, that's electronic warfare, missile defense, the whole thing. They're based out of Omaha, but that is the Strategic Command that launches global thermonuclear war or responds to it. They tweeted the following: ...\L\GMLXZSSAW. And
God.
People went a little crazy wondering, oh my God, what's going on? The tweet was since deleted, and there was a FOIA request that was filed with U.S. Strategic Command. And we got an official response. This is from a reporter named Michael Thalen. He filed a Freedom of Information request with the agency. And what they said was, nothing nefarious occurred. The Twitter account was not hacked. And apparently what happened was the account, whoever was in charge of their social media, allowed their account to be accessed unattended, allowed a young child to access the keyboard. Okay, great. All's well that ends well. But if this is your level of like control over stuff, you just want to make sure that certain passwords or certain, you're not logged into certain things where a cat walking on the keyboard or that very same young child is sending the ICBMs skyward. I just want to be certain because I feel better about this now, and I also kind of feel worse.
So here we were concerned about somebody else having the nuclear football.
Right.
And that was the big concern of many in the nation. But really, our concern should be what it is all the time. Young children and being accidentally logged on.
It's not supposed to be there for the kids.
That is the Midday Midway. More baseball talk with Score baseball analyst and former major leaguer and expert on all things baseball, Cubs and Sox and all of it, and pitching inside and what's okay and what's not. Cody Decker joins us next on the Score.
With a tweet?
Odyssey is your new home for all the audio that matters to you. Download the Odyssey app today to listen to the Score. An Odyssey station.
Does your business specialize in kitchen and bath remodeling? Studio 41 is your complete kitchen and bath resource, now featuring the bold look of Kohler. We work with you, providing the service and support to help you get the job done right. Visit a showroom or find us online at shopstudio41.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.